This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a recent article in Politico entitled "The Dark Side of the EV Revolution: Road Taxes." The highway system is financed by gasoline taxes. The federal tax is 18.4 cents that was imposed in 1993 and hasn't changed. The state tax in Louisiana is 20 cents, and that was imposed in 1990 and hasn't changed. So a total of 38.4 cents per gallon of gas in the state of Louisiana. Louisiana is one of the lowest gas tax states. I think they're tied for eighth with the state of Texas as it relates to gas taxes. But the new challenge is, how do we finance this? How do we replace taxes lost as a result of electric vehicles? Because the tax is imposed from the wholesaler to the retailer at the wholesale level as to the amount of gallons that are actually sold. And that's where the transactional tax is imposed. Well, there is no such place for an electric vehicle. Joshua Bassichus joins us. He's the assistant professor of public policy and environmental studies at Tulane University. Joshua, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Newell. Thanks for having me.
So, Joshua, this is a complex political issue on the one hand, and just a complex issue all around as it relates to the financing of the highway system in this country as well as the 50 states. Where do you see this headed relative to EVs?
Yeah, so in general, when we think about taxation, there's usually two goals. One is to raise revenue for the state, which the state can spend on its various government programs and services, and the other is to discourage a particular behavior. So you think about taxes on cigarettes were meant to discourage cigarettes because of the public health. Now, we don't want to discourage driving because we accept that driving is a part of modern life, but we do take a toll on those roads, as people from around here know. When you drive on the roads around here, there's potholes, there's other issues, and so the goal of the gas tax is to raise revenue to keep those roads in good shape despite our usage of them. So we're paying for the so-called damage that we're doing to the roads. You phrased the question perfectly, which is that, and I should mention that right now Louisiana has a relatively low adoption of electric vehicles. So if you look at the states as a whole, we have a far fewer people that have switched here to EVs, and we also, as you mentioned at the top, have a lower gas tax to begin with than many other states. So I don't think it's reached a crisis point yet in Louisiana because the magnitude of the shift hasn't happened yet, but it's certainly something that's going to happen. It's a ticking time bomb, if you will, assuming that the EV transition continues at the pace that it's gone at so far.
And we know that historically this has been a politically challenging issue for folks, right? Because this hits everyone's pocketbooks, and those that are reluctant to go to the EV side of the equation, if in fact there's an increase in gas tax or there's a flip as to the manner in which they replace the tax. And some of the ideas being bantered around are interesting, to say the least, right?
Yeah, so it's definitely, you know, raising taxes is never popular, but raising gas taxes in particular, because like you said, it's a pocketbook issue. When you hear politicians talk about inflation, one of the first things they mention is gas prices. And of course, taxes are, you know, part of what we pay at the pump, as you say. So in terms of solutions, on the one hand, you know, people are going to disagree about the degree to which we should be incentivizing electric vehicles. But certainly the federal government, you know, due to concerns about climate change, the federal government and many states are incentivizing it. So one option that's being thrown around there is something called a vehicle miles traveled tax, which is neutral or non-discriminatory. So whether you have an EV or a gas-powered vehicle, you pay the tax based on miles traveled rather than filling up at the pump. And that way we're not discouraging people to switch to electric vehicles, but we're also not penalizing those that are sticking with their gas vehicles.
And how would they go about doing that? I know that cars today, there's a tracking system as it relates to your warranty and stuff, and they kind of know, and there are chips in the electronics of the vehicle. They know how many miles you've actually traveled.
Right.
So I guess government would have to make that you could disconnect it, but that make that mandatory, because it's the only way that, unless they're going to go to an honor system, which I don't think that's going to work very well.
Yeah, it wouldn't. You bring up a good point. This is not an easy thing to do administratively. And I read the Politico article that you cited at the top, and it talked about the trade-off. Like, do we put in government, odometers in every vehicle, or do we work with the auto companies to somehow link that existing data that they collect to the state? So it's an administratively complicated thing, and that's why it hasn't happened. It's been talked about a lot, but very few states, if any, actually have implemented it. And raising taxes is complicated politically, and vehicle miles traveled taxes are complicated administratively. But one way or another, this is a problem that's going to have to be solved.
And, you know, everyone says that they just want to have this replace what people have paid before, but that's going to be a difficult way to figure out how that's going to work as well, right? It may be that last year I took three vacations to, driving vacations and didn't fly anywhere, and this year I took none. So my average miles per year may change substantially, and I'm assuming a lot of other people have that same experience. So where the baseline is going to be kind of interesting as to how folks are going to develop that.
Exactly. And to your point, as much as I like to trust folks, this is not really something that we can just leave to the honor system, especially with, how complicated people's lives are. We can't just necessarily rely on, self-reported travel from the previous year, because just like you said, things change from one year to another. So this is definitely a situation without an easy fix. But I think, a few options. One is to raise the gas tax, but since you mentioned that hasn't happened since 1990, that kind of shows, how politically difficult that is. Another is to impose some sort of alternative fee on electric vehicles specifically, which a few states have done. And then the third would be to get smart, either by working with the private sector or not, in terms of actually clocking people's mileage.
Yeah, this administration thing is going to be really tough, I think, to work out. But one of the things that I find curious about all of this is we have been issuing mandates as it relates to the auto industry for a long time, making vehicles more efficient, more miles per gallon, this, that, knowing all the while that we've been eroding the road tax. And the flip side is understanding that our highway infrastructure in this country is bad. It doesn't get a good grade. I mean, we have bridges that are collapsing on major arterial roadways, and it's almost as if the the political infrastructure hasn't come to grips with this at all, and yet we are issuing these crazy deadlines of 2030, 2035, 2040. We're going to be at 70% EVs in some states, and we've yet to figure out how we're going to continue to finance the highway infrastructure in this country, one way or the other, because the general funds in the representative states, as well as the federal government, there's not enough money there to replace it.
Yes, although there was a big bipartisan infrastructure law that was recently passed by the federal government. And like you said, it's a combination of state and federal revenues. So that means it's going to vary by state. And, you know, this is a classic issue of, you know, how much, you know, should the government help with day-to-day things, whether it's maintaining the roads or anything else, because that costs money and that means raising taxes. So, but to your earlier point, you're right, in terms of the short-term thinking versus the long-term thinking, right? In politics, it's always about short-term thinking. But some of these really big problems involve long-term thinking. And so building bridges or even building electricity transmission, for that matter, takes a long time and a lot of planning. So you can't be thinking about that in terms of the next election cycle. And that's one of the real challenges that we have across the board.
Where do you, your sense, where does this end up?
if I knew the answer to that question,
I want to clue into the Joshua crystal ball. If you were a betting man, where would you place this bet?
I think that there's going to be some. So we have to first think about: are we talking about Louisiana or across the board? But where I would say is there's going to be a new mechanism for replacing the revenue lost from the gas tax. So I don't know whether that's going to involve raising the gas tax or whether that's going to involve other sources of funding, other fees, other taxes. Same thing, by the way, with those long-term targets for electric vehicles and renewable energy. It's much easier to set a target than to make sure the target's reached. So, I think one way or another, the money is going to have to materialize, but I can't venture a guess as to the source, because that's all about politics, and that's going to vary from one state to another.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I guess government's stake in every one of these alternative energy sources, as well as EVs, is a lot bigger than what I think most people realize at first blush. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely. This is, in this country, big problems are always solved by a combination of the public and private sectors. So, and the government, of course, sets the parameters for the private sector. They set the rules of the game, so to speak. So, no matter what, this issue about transportation funding and revenue is going to have to be resolved by a combination of the government and the private sector. And so the government does have a big stake in it. And that's why people should, I always tell my students to pay attention to politics and policy, because, you know, whether you like it or not, that our entire society depends on it.
Yeah, you know, I was reading, not to go off topic, but I was reading another article the other day about wind and a bunch of the projects on the East Coast, and I can't remember the terminology that they use. I think it was like offtake, that's it. Uh-huh. The offtake price per megawatt hour that government is agreeing to buy power from, that's 4 and 5 times greater than what the consumer's paying at the present time. And
yeah, well,
it's like, how did we get this upside down economic model and think that the consumer's going to be happy about this?
I don't quite understand. Yeah, I mean, the government has always intervened in energy markets, whether it's subsidizing oil and gas or whether it's subsidizing wind and solar. And the price that we pay on our electricity bills is the result of a complex set of decisions that are made at state public utility commissions, which here we call the Public Service Commission, as well as by the utility companies and various other energy industry actors. So, you know, you can never look with electricity prices, unlike gas prices, which are very straightforward. Everyone knows exactly what they're paying when they fill up their tank. Electricity prices are based on actually a heavier degree of government intervention and regulation. And, you know, that's what I, again, that's what I teach my students is how to understand what's going on there and be informed. But ultimately, we have less control over electricity because, you know, utility companies are monopolies. So if you live in New Orleans, Entergy is your utility company. So that's it's kind of a different can of worms than what we were talking about before.
Yeah, I took utility law at Tulane Law School, actually, and it was an eye-opener.
Exactly.
And it's changed. The way that they do the rating now has actually changed for the time that I was in school. But it was, I think at that time it was a guaranteed internal rate of return model, which is no longer the case, is what I'm told from a regulatory standpoint. But
yeah, it's still cost of service is still the predominant model, but different states have tinkered with it in different ways because the energy sector has been changing. There's now something called performance-based rate making, which is sort of a new. But at the end of the day, what you learned in law school is still correct. At the end of the day, it's a guaranteed government-determined rate of return for a monopoly company, a utility company.
Yeah. Well, the real challenge for me is if I can remember what I actually learned in law school. It was so many years ago. Joshua Bassiches, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time and your insight, and have a great week.
Great to talk to you. You too. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll go to the talk lines when we return. We can talk about anything. It's open for any topic you'd like to discuss or anything that we discussed today. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Give us a shout. We'll talk about any issue that you want to talk about. Let's go to TJ on line one. TJ, welcome to the show. What say you?
Thank you. I had two questions for you, Newell, and then I'll hang up and just live. One, I wanted to know how the city council people justify driving around. And they look like suburbans. I'm guessing with upwards of plus $80,000-$90,000 vehicles for their travel, when realistically playing what I'm guessing travel miles of $1.25 a mile, they could virtually travel 100,000 miles, which I doubt they do, to justify that car and insurance. That was question one. And question two I have for you, I wish you would address, or help me better understand, is how is it that the city council hasn't addressed putting some type of financial cap on not just this mayor, but any mayor's travel? You know, if you said it was annually going to be 50, 100, maybe it's $200,000. I don't have the numbers to reflect on what would be, reasonable. But why haven't they put something like that into effect, or at least address it, so we don't have a city official who's traveling at will on taxpayer dollars? So those are two things. If it's cool, I'll hang up so I can better listen to you on the radio, and love to hear your response.
Sure, TJ. Thank you so much for the call. Let me take the second one first, financial cap. I do believe that they did do something in that regard, and they asked for more accountability as it relates to the cost of the mayor's travel. In the form of governance in the city of New Orleans, the mayor has a lot of authority, and the legislative body less as to what actually happens there. This council has been a lot more proactive than most as it relates to placing some guardrails on the manner in which the mayor can spend tax dollars and how we go about doing that. And I think some of the issues that brought that to the forefront was the Wisner Foundation negotiation, the manner in which the mayor just violated a number of internal controls within the organization, as well as spending dollars and didn't follow the code of ordinances about what should be brought to the council for them to have an opportunity to weigh in on, like the Wisner. That was done improperly. So they've had to take a much more proactive role. And you have the separation of powers issue between the legislative branch and the executive branch. But I do believe that they have flexed muscles in that regard. Now, as it relates to council cars, that's something that's totally within their purview. I'm sure that there is a lengthy justification that they feel like that they have. It is a benefit. There's no doubt about that. It's a very nice benefit, quite frankly. And, you know, the question really is, in some folks' minds, what I hear a lot is whether or not they are actually full-time or part-time employees, and whether or not there should be they get money for mileage or for the some kind of sum, fixed sum for the use of their personal cars, as opposed to having not only cars but security as well. And that's an issue that's really up to the taxpayers to ask these questions. I mean, I think these are all legitimate questions to ask of individuals. I mean, I know there are a lot of meetings that they're going to, a lot of times, all points in times during the day. I guess you could probably make a good case for and a good case against, quite frankly, as it relates to that benefit. And I don't mean to evade the issue, but, the time that's spent to do some of these jobs appropriately is a lot more than what most people believe. This council has had to take on a lot of issues because of the construct of the governance model, or lack thereof, that this mayor has put into effect in city administration. I mean, it's just story after story after story after story that the media has broke relative to this. And quite frankly, this mayor has been challenged by some and not challenged by others as it relates to having to answer to these issues. And she has unilaterally decided to, sit down with some folks and not sit down with others. any longer because they're not challenged. I mean, this show being one. I mean, there was a time where the mayor was coming in and visiting with us, and I can't even remember the question. I asked her a question one time. She went off the rails and had her public information officer call me and talk to me about, you don't understand the power of the mayor. I said, well, you know, the person that called me used to be in the media. And it's like, well, I'm kind of shocked. You don't obviously understand the power of the media. I said, I don't need the mayor to come on my show. I mean, we're going to talk about the issues and we'll talk about them. I'm giving her the opportunity to explain herself to my listening audience. And if she doesn't want to, that's okay, but you're not going to stymie my ability to talk about this issue on any given moment. Actually, it's easier for me to talk about it if she's not sitting there and addressing it, quite frankly. So, you know, do what you feel like you want to. And she's obviously played favorites for any number of reasons, where she feels like she's got a much more friendly atmosphere out there, you know, and landscape, and is not challenged on the issues, you know. And I mean, look, a lot of these folks are my friends. I challenge them, and it's just kind of that's the way it works. And I don't do it in a demeaning or disrespectful way, but some folks don't, and you know, some folks are willing to adhere to guardrails on an interview as to what's in bounds, what's out of bounds, or otherwise. And it's just a style, I think, and a conscious decision that some folks make for whatever reason, you know. But these are all questions that should be asked and have been asked. And there's a strong belief by some that they, for their own personal safety and otherwise, and there have been, you know, instances where their safety has been placed at risk, that they have some of the benefits that they do have. Give us a call, 504-260-1870. TJ, thank you for the call. I hope I answered your question. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. On a text line, Newell, why doesn't the council require an after-action report on official travel so they can see what they are paying for? There is a report that they get now and that they demanded that they get as it relates to the expenditures of the mayor's travel, and I believe that there is a time period by which the administration has to respond as well. As I said before, I know I've had many of the council members on, and we've discussed this issue about some of the proactive things that they've done to be to try and hold this mayor accountable relative to her travel. You know, when you look around the city, I've talked about this, we're off and running talking about climate change, and we can't fix a sidewalk or a pothole, right? And it continues to be an issue over and over and over again. Folks have had unfinished streets. I got some texts yesterday. 11 months they have been without a street in front of their house, and it's been dirt. And in many respects, some of these folks have had to park their cars around the corner, and they can't even drive to their house. And, you know, the frustration is growing. And these are the execution things that I think people have legitimately pointed out. Not all, but most have pointed out these issues and have challenged this administration as to where they stand on a lot of this. Have they had some successes? Absolutely. In fact, we've talked about those on this show. But a lot of the failures are far greater than some of the successes. And, you know, and some of the successes came with a lot of prodding and a lot of things that have had to go on. And just for example, they got a report yesterday as it relates to accounts payable. That is low-hanging fruit. That is not rocket science. That's accounting 101. And if you can't get that right, it's hard to imagine the breadth and depth of the issues that we're facing inside the internal operations of this organization if you can't be all over that. It looks like through the effort of the council, bringing it to the forefront, talking about these challenges, educating the public as to the downstream implications of not being able to get that right, not creating a lot of competition. When you go out to public bids and just you've got all these companies that are refusing to bid on public projects that benefit the community because they do not want to be the bank for the city of New Orleans. I've said this a million times. These vendors are basically the working capital for the city. Because they go 120, 160, 180 days without being paid. They have taken advantage of these companies, both minority companies and others. And we have all these programs that we're spending money on to benefit some of these disadvantaged business enterprises. But by the same token, not paying them on time. The best way to help any business, and in particular a DBE, is to pay on time. It's not that hard to figure that out. Because if not, they have to go borrow money for a working capital loan because they got to pay their people. They feel strongly about the folks that work for them. They feel strongly about the success of their company, and yet the city has been a leech. And a lot of folks have not taken this mayor to task on those issues. Finally, the hue and cry from vendors has been heard. And it comes to the forefront because nobody's bidding on jobs. No, thank you. There's enough work out there. We'll go someplace and work for someone who's actually going to pay us on time. We don't mind being held accountable. If there's a conflict and you think that we hadn't done something or you hadn't delivered what we said we were going to deliver vis-a-vis the contract, we're willing and able to sit down and discuss this and talk about how we're going to resolve it. But over and over and over again, over the last 6 years, this has continued to be a problem that no one was willing to really focus on and get it resolved until we reached almost the point of no return. The point of no return is you know you're there when you can't get folks to come and do work for you and refuse to because they say, we can't trust that city government is actually going to pay us. And all we kept hearing is that we got more money. We got the money. That even makes it worse. It exacerbates the problem. They don't want to hear, I've got the money, when they're not paying, right? And the whole thing is trying to get a competitive price for the work. So what has happened to the taxpayers? You're paying more to get the work done than the governments in the surrounding area in this metro area. And that's a fact. That is a fact. And it's the same thing with garbage collection. I mean, we're seeing it right now. Still, once a week in the city of New Orleans. You know, and can't seem to get that straight either. Why? Because we're letting contracts with companies that are undercapitalized. And that challenge, coupled with the city's inability to pay on time, which both of the major garbage contractors that we had going back to the beginning of Mayor Cantrell's administration, legitimate concerns. They warned everybody. We're not getting paid on time. So you made a company that's trying to do the right thing, trying, you know, to get this done, trying to deliver this incredible service. They're not able to do so because basically you overwhelm them with your ineptitude, your inefficiency, and there was no way that they were ever going to be able to succeed because they couldn't rely on their own reserves or their own capital to pull them out of the doldrums of not being paid. And we can go through vendor after vendor after vendor. Some have been able to survive because they recognize the risk, they will properly capitalize, and they match their risk to the capitalization of their company. But a lot of folks went in there thinking the city's a city, they're going to pay their bills. Wrong. And now they've taken it on the chin, and they're going to have a hard time surviving, some of which have already sold because they couldn't. We buried them. This is a tragic consequence of not being able to deliver and execute on small details or small things that are just not that hard. But they're emblematic of a culture within an organization that will continue to reveal itself in these one-off stories. And there's no story worse, no story worse than us bringing about a situation where we put our local companies in distress because we cannot pay them on time. Think about that for a moment. Our government, our folks that we vote for, that we put in office, create a culture that actually works to the detriment of small businesses and others in this city. Stand tall, stand proud. That's where we've been. Thankfully, there are those that have the political will to stand up and call it out. It's not fun. I understand. Everybody's trying to get along in order to accomplish things, but you get to that point of no return where you have to do a lot of what the city council has done. It's a shame. It's an embarrassment, quite frankly. It's an absolute embarrassment that we have allowed this to get to the point of where it is. And everyone, from the top to the bottom, in the finance section of this city, should be embarrassed. They have not taken the necessary pride in the work that they do. And I certainly hope they understand what the downstream implications are and the heartache that they've created for a whole bunch of companies that have tried to do the right thing and provide a service to the city of New Orleans. And I certainly hope that the next mayor and the one who is thinking about running recognizes that this is critical to the success of a business organization. Government is a business organization, and you got to run it as such. You are not a charity. You are a business organization that has fiduciary obligations to those that put you in office. Every single one of them. Not some, to the detriment of others. And the prioritization ought to be on those critical services first before we spend dollars anywhere else. Because without critical services being met and delivered in an efficient fashion, we know what the downstream implication and the outcome of that is. An out-migration greater than an in-migration. And that's pushing the proverbial snowball over the cliff and see what happens then. We'll be right back and check in with Ian Hoke, who's in for Scoot today. Stay with us. Ian Hoke is in for Scoot, and he joins us. What do we have coming up, Ian? Hey,
good afternoon, Sheriff. It's funny, we're playing Johnny B. Goode right now because
yep, absolutely.
This is one of the best songs of all time. And what I'm talking about on the show today in the first hour is what makes a perfect song. I asked the audience yesterday, give me what some of you think the best songs of all times are. Not just the best songs, but songs that are perfect. You know, they cannot possibly be improved on. They're flawless in every way. And so we're thinking, like, you know, Respect by Aretha Franklin, Hey Jude by the Beatles. I got a ton of great suggestions. So all our bumper music today is going to be only perfect songs. And we're actually going to talk to somebody from the Loyola College of Music. Rainey Antoine Jr. is a professor of practice there, and he's going to tell us what makes the perfect song, what are the tricks of the trade that songwriters and producers use to make magic in the studio. In the 3 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Devin Snow. He's the Red Beans and Rice Day guy. You may have seen him on TikTok or Instagram or Twitter.
He's hysterical.
He's amazing. This guy just oozes talent. We've had him on the show once before. He's been up to a ton of stuff since then. So we're going to get caught up with Red Beans and Rice guy, Devin Snow, one of New Orleans' most famous food influencers. We'll have a good talk about soul food, sports, and much more. And then, of course, we'll be talking a little bit of politics. You know, a little bit of Trump, a little bit of Harris. We'll zig, we'll zag, we'll rip it and dip it. We'll zip it up and zip it out, Newell. Stay tuned, man.
All righty. Sounds like a great lineup coming your way, folks. Stay tuned for Ian Hoke in for Scoot. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you guys again in the morning. Have a great Tuesday evening. On a text line, Newell, why doesn't the council require an after-action report on official travel so they can see what they are paying for? There is a report that they get now and that they demanded that they get as it relates to the expenditures of the mayor's travel, and I believe that there is a time period by which the administration has to respond as well. As I said before, I know I've had many of the council members on, and we've discussed this issue about some of the proactive things that they've done to try and hold this mayor accountable relative to her travel. You know, when you look around the city, I've talked about this, we're off and running talking about climate change, and we can't fix a sidewalk or a pothole, right? And it continues to be an issue over and over and over again. Folks have had unfinished streets. I got some texts yesterday. 11 months they have been without a street in front of their house, and it's been dirt. And in many respects, some of these folks have had to park their cars around the corner, and they can't even drive to their house. And, you know, the frustration is growing. And these are the execution things that I think people have legitimately pointed out. Not all, but most have pointed out these issues and have challenged this administration as to where they stand on a lot of this. Have they had some successes? Absolutely. In fact, we've talked about those on this show. But a lot of the failures are far greater than some of the successes. And, you know, and some of the successes came with a lot of prodding and a lot of things that have had to go on. And just for example, they got a report yesterday as it relates to accounts payable. That is low-hanging fruit. That is not rocket science. That's accounting 101. And if you can't get that right, it's hard to imagine the breadth and depth of the issues that we're facing inside the internal operations of this organization if you can't be all over that. It looks like through the effort of the council, bringing it to the forefront, talking about these challenges, educating the public as to the downstream implications of not being able to get that right, not creating a lot of competition. When you go out to public bids and just you've got all these companies that are refusing to bid on public projects that benefit the community because they do not want to be the bank for the city of New Orleans. I've said this a million times. These vendors are basically the working capital for the city. Because they go 120, 160, 180 days without being paid, they have taken advantage of these companies, both minority companies and others, and we have all these programs that we're spending money on to benefit some of these disadvantaged business enterprises, but by the same token, not paying them on time. The best way to help any business, and in particular a DBE, is to pay on time. It's not that hard to figure that out, because if not, they have to go borrow money for a working capital loan because they got to pay their people. They feel strongly about the folks that work for them. They feel strongly about the success of their company, and yet the city has been a leech. And a lot of folks have not taken this mayor to task on those issues. Finally, the hue and cry from vendors has been heard. And it comes to the forefront because nobody's bidding on jobs. No, thank you. There's enough work out there. We'll go someplace and work for someone who's actually going to pay us on time. We don't mind being held accountable. If there's a conflict and you think that we hadn't done something or you hadn't delivered what we said we were going to deliver vis-a-vis the contract, we're willing and able to sit down and discuss this and talk about how we're going to resolve it. But over and over and over again, over the last 6 years, this has continued to be a problem that no one was willing to really focus on and get it resolved until we reached almost the point of no return. The point of no return is you know you're there when you can't get folks to come and do work for you and refuse to because they say, we can't trust that city government is actually going to pay us. And all we kept hearing is that we got more money. We got the money. That even makes it worse. It exacerbates the problem. They don't want to hear, I've got the money, when they're not paying, right? I mean, and the whole thing is trying to get a competitive price for the work. So what has happened to the taxpayers? You're paying more to get the work done than the governments in the surrounding area in this metro area. And that's a fact. That is a fact. And it's the same thing with garbage collection. I mean, we're seeing it right now. Still, once a week in the city of New Orleans. You know, and can't seem to get that straight either. Why? Because we're letting contracts with companies that are undercapitalized. And that challenge, coupled with the city's inability to pay on time, which both of the major garbage contractors that we had going back to the beginning of Mayor Cantrell's administration, legitimate concerns. They warned everybody. We're not getting paid on time. So you made a company that's trying to do the right thing, trying, you know, to get this done, trying to deliver this incredible service. They're not able to do so because basically you overwhelm them with your ineptitude, your inefficiency, and there was no way that they were ever going to be able to succeed because they couldn't rely on their own reserves or their own capital to pull them out of the doldrums of not being paid. And we can go through vendor after vendor after vendor. Some have been able to survive because they recognized the risk, they were properly capitalized, and they matched their risk to the capitalization of their company. But a lot of folks went in there thinking the city's a city, they're going to pay their bills. Wrong. And now they've taken it on the chin. And they're going to have a hard time surviving, some of which have already sold because they couldn't. We buried them. This is a tragic consequence of not being able to deliver and execute on small details or small things that are just not that hard. But they're emblematic of a culture within an organization that will continue to reveal itself in these one-off stories. And there's no story worse, no story worse than us bringing about a situation where we put our local companies in distress because we cannot pay them on time. Think about that for a moment. Our government, our folks that we vote for, that we put in office, create a culture that actually works to the detriment of small businesses and others in this city. Stand tall. Stand proud. That's where we've been. Thankfully, there are those that have the political will to stand up and call it out. It's not fun. I understand. Everybody's trying to get along in order to accomplish things, but you get to that point of no return where you have to do a lot of what the city council has done. It's a shame. It's an embarrassment, quite frankly. It's an absolute embarrassment that we have allowed this to get to the point of where it is. And everyone, from the top to the bottom, in the finance section of this city, should be embarrassed. They have not taken the necessary pride in the work that they do. And I certainly hope they understand what the downstream implications are and the heartache that they've created for a whole bunch of companies that have tried to do the right thing and provide a service to the city of New Orleans. And I certainly hope that the next mayor and the one who is thinking about running recognizes that this is critical to the success of a business organization. Government is a business organization, and you got to run it as such. You are not a charity. You are a business organization that has fiduciary obligations to those that put you in office. Every single one of them. Not some, to the detriment of others. And the prioritization ought to be on those critical services first before we spend dollars anywhere else. Because without critical services being met and delivered in an efficient fashion, we know what the downstream implication and the outcome of that is. An out-migration greater than an in-migration. And that's pushing the proverbial snowball over the cliff and see what happens then. We'll be right back and check in with Ian Hoke, who's in for Scoot today. Stay with us. Ian Hoke is in for Scoot, and he joins us. What do we have coming up, Ian? Hey,
good afternoon, Sheriff. It's funny, we're playing Johnny B. Good right now because
absolutely,
this is one of the best songs of all time. And what I'm talking about on the show today in the first hour is what makes a perfect song. I asked the audience yesterday, give me what some of you think the best songs of all times are. Not just the best songs, but songs that are perfect. You know, they cannot possibly be improved on. They're flawless in every way. And so we're thinking like, you know, Respect by Aretha Franklin, Hey Jude by the Beatles. I got a ton of great suggestions. So all our bumper music today is going to be only perfect songs. And we're actually going to talk to somebody from the Loyola College of Music. Rainey Antoine Jr. is a professor of practice there, and he's going to tell us what makes the perfect song. What are the tricks of the trade that songwriters and producers use to make magic in the studio? In the 3 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Devin Snow. He's the Red Beans and Rice Day guy. You may have seen him on TikTok or Instagram or Twitter.
He's hysterical.
He's amazing. This guy just oozes talent. We've had him on the show once before. He's been up to a ton of stuff since then. So we're going to get caught up with Red Beans and Rice guy, Devin Snow, one of New Orleans' most famous food influencers. We'll have a good talk about soul food, sports, and much more. And then, of course, we'll be talking a little bit of politics, you know, a little bit of Trump, a little bit of Harris. We'll zig, we'll zag, we'll rip it and dip it. We'll zip it up and zip it out, Newell. Stay tuned, man.
All righty, Stick. Sounds like a great lineup coming your way, folks. Stay tuned for Ian Hoke in for Scoot. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you guys again in the morning. Have a great Tuesday evening.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.